welcome to the Poem of the Week. Each week, our poems are intended to help you practice the best, most current medicine by alerting you to studies that could change your practice. As usual, our host this week is National Public Radio's Dr. Michael Wilkes and Essential Evidence Senior Editor Dr. Mark Abel. Gentlemen.
Hello, Mark. How are you?
I'm good.
Good. This week you've chosen a great article. It reminds us of sort of historically where we come with lots of our treatments. This is an article that looks at beta blockers and its association with MI. I'll talk about the article you chose in a moment. But just by way of background, listeners, particularly those of us who are our age, have come through lots of iterations with beta blockers. They aren't. They're the best. They're not the best. What we do know is that beta blockers currently are the first-line therapy in the control of symptoms for people with chronic stable angina, particularly those with effort-induced angina. Beta blockers themselves have a physiologic effect on catechols, catecholamines specifically, the norepinephrine and epinephrine. They work by playing with alpha and beta adrenergic receptors. There are three types of these receptors. Just by way of review, beta 1 are found primarily in heart muscle. When you stimulate or activate those receptors, they result in an increase in heart rate, an increase in contractility and conduction. They usually decrease AV node refractiveness. Beta 2 are those, they're also present in heart muscles, much more prominent though in bronchial and peripheral vascular muscle. And what we call beta 3 are found primarily in fat tissue in the heart. When you stimulate these beta 3 receptors, they may mediate catechol-induced thermogenesis and perhaps reduce cardiac contractility. Anyways, the effects on the heart are significant. We know that when you stimulate beta activity, it leads to an increase in myocardial oxygen demand. Conversely, when you block beta activity, you can reduce myocardial oxygen demand. It also, we know that oxygen demand varies directly with things like heart rate and contractility and, I guess, ventricular wall stress, and that when you decrease wall stress, this is mediated in part by the anti-hypertensive effect of drugs and particularly of beta blockers. All of this, sort of lots of physiology going back to residency and medical school, but it leads us to the question that's asked of this article published in JAMA in 2012, volume 308, number 13, beginning on page 1340. The question that's asked is, are beta blockers useful in adults with a history of myocardial infarction, known coronary artery disease, or risk factors for coronary artery disease? So in summary, where are we with beta blockers and MI, Mark?
Well, yeah, it's interesting. They've been used for so long, and they kind of grandfathered in some ways. The recommendations are based on very old trials that predate a lot of we currently do in terms of, aggressive use of statins, ACE inhibitors, ARBs, even calcium channel blockers, revascularization. There's just a lot of things that have changed since those early trials were done. And a lot of the trials were done on patients with heart failure, but then extrapolated to patients with coronary risk factors or heart disease. And so the researchers, this is not a randomized trial. This is an observational study, but they tried to do the best they could to account for differences. In a group of patients with MI, the doctor has to make some decision about we're going to put them on a beta blocker or not, or the patient may or may not tolerate it. So that can create differences between groups. So in this study, they had 45,000 patients, 45 and older, and they all had either known heart disease or at least three heart disease risk factors. And they divided them into three groups. There was one group that had a history of an MI, another group that had heart disease but no history of MI, and a third group that didn't have heart disease but had the risk factor. And the primary outcome they looked at was the usual cardiovascular death, non-fatal MI, or non-fatal stroke. They also looked at all-cause mortality, revascularization, hospitalization, secondary outcomes like that. And they used what's called propensity scoring. So it's essentially a multivariate approach that adjusts for the differences I mentioned. So if, for example, physicians were more likely to prescribe beta blockers to a smoker who'd had an MI than a non-smoker, it would try to adjust for that statistically. So, again, not an RCT, but trying to do the best they could with these data. They were roughly similar groups, numbers of patients in each group, and they had really good follow-up, and they had data, about half the patients had enough data to do this propensity score analysis, 20,000 patients. And in those with a history of MI, so the highest risk group, event rates between the beta blocker group and the non-beta blocker group were not significantly different for any of the outcomes, primary or secondary. If you looked at those who had heart disease but hadn't had a prior MI, there was, again, no significant difference between the use or non-use of beta blockers for the primary outcome. Those using beta blockers actually had higher rates of revascularization and hospitalization, though, so worse outcomes. In those with the risk factors alone, the primary outcome was significantly higher in the beta blocker group than the non-use group. For the primary outcome and for revascularization and for hospitalizations. They looked at the subgroup of people who'd had an MI within the past year, and those patients did have a significantly lower rate of hospitalization and revascularization. So basically, this is kind of shakes things up a little bit and really shows that I think we need to look again in the modern era at the role of who are they for, and how long should they be used? This study, if you looked at these results, would suggest that really the primary beneficiaries are people who've had an MI in the past year. And so maybe it's like Plavix or something like that, where we prescribe it for a year after an acute MI, but then stop it. That's certainly, there are also alternatives, and we need, there have been studies. I think it was the INVEST study that compared a calcium channel blocker and an ARB with a beta blocker and found similar outcomes. So very interesting and I think, results that are going to, hopefully lead to some further studies. What was your take, Mike?
I spent most of my time reading this trying to think of why physiologically it would make sense to reduce beta activity in the first year, but it wouldn't make a difference after that first year. Again, the first year isn't surprising. You're decreasing oxygen demand and doing good things, but why after that would it not make a difference? I don't understand that.
A lot of these folks are on other drugs that are going to be having similar effects.
Yeah.
So the additional benefit of the beta blocker may not be there anymore. When all we had was aspirin and beta blockers and nitroglycerin ointment, then it was probably, may have been a different answer. But nowadays, these folks are all on high-dose statins. They're all on aspirin. A lot of them are on Plavix or clopidogrel. A lot of them are on calcium channel blockers, ACE inhibitor, and ARB. So, and in terms of that first year, that's the time, it was the patients who'd had an MI in the previous year that seemed to have some benefit. And that's a time when, the scar tissue's forming in the myocardium. They're at high risk for arrhythmias. It may be that it's helping prevent some of those arrhythmic events. That's kind of speculative.
No, but it makes perfect sense. Well, thanks, Mark. We'll talk with you again next week.
All right, see you then.
Well, that's this week's poem. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to read this and other recent poems, please go to www.essentialevidence.com. And please join us again next week for another medical poem.